Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we got a long way to go. We're very humble about this, and we'll move on to a big road game next week. But this was a big game for our team, and mistakes were made, but I think it's something we can really grow from. There's a lot of young guys out there. He's doing a phenomenal job, and the other guys are doing phenomenal jobs. I mean, Donovan had some punt returns. They're close, but he came through as well, and so many of them. You look up and down the roster, playing with great effort. I think that's where it all starts. The effort is really there, and it was last week, and there's mistakes made. We just got to grow from them. We knew what we were in for today. We really did. We knew we were in for a football fight. Last time we were down here, went to double overtime. This time it goes to overtime. Indiana's got a veteran ball club.
First place y'all started the offensive line. We had a tough injury to Brandon Bowen. Demetrius Knox went in and played very well. You know, this is the kind of bend but don't break defense we're getting ready to play. And, you know, to be methodical in that kind of environment, and just because they're not going to give you the deep ball. You know, JT played an exception when you have protection and the guys are making plays for them. That's very good performance on offense. Very good chemistry on offense. Receivers and quarterbacks are playing on a very high level. You know, very efficient. So JT's efficiency tonight was elite. You guys are making plays for them and protecting them. This is a good time to be cooking, but it's also a good time to have a bye week and get these guys fresh.
You're always, during the course of a game, you're really considering a lot of different things. One thing we certainly knew is that we had a chance to bring it back. Probably nobody else in this universe probably thought so, except for the guys in that locker room. Our guys fought back and gave us a chance, particularly with some of the injuries that we had. You know, proud of the way in which the guys played. They played tough and hard-nosed, but just still, you give a team 21 points in terms of turnover, and they score from the defensive end of it. It's, you know, obviously we had a few too many miscues in that regard. Just didn't play as well as we'd like.
I think their guys were just being players. I don't know if it was a concerted effort coming into the game. I have no idea. I'm not in their meeting rooms, but I just got to find a way to get it through. Obviously, led to some big plays. You know, some tips led to some interceptions. I'm probably more, you know, frustrated at the fumbles than anything for myself. So I got to be better early on, not turn that ball over. I got to find a way to hold on to that ball.
I thought the start of it was pretty good. And then after, you know, we missed one, and then it started to, like I say, steamroll the other way. We couldn't get it back. That was a tough environment for Kevin, too. Again, I'm sure he's disappointed. I'm sure he wanted to show better. But those things happen, and we got to move on from it. I'm not going to let it get rock bottom. I just, like I told the team, it's not fun. It doesn't feel good. It's horrible. We don't like it. But this is the hand we're playing with. So we got to feel. Only guys, I'm going to say it again every week, the only guys that can fix it are the guys in the room. Coaches in the room, the players in the room. It's not going to change. What we got to do is stick together. Got to hold each other up, hold each other accountable, and we got to keep playing. And that's what we're going to do. This team is not going to quit. This is going to be week to week. You guys asked me last week. I never said that Kevin was going to be the starter for the rest of the season. We'll go back, watch the tape, and go from there and make a decision next week. But if I'm going to change quarterback, I'm going back to Deshaun. I mean, I did text Deshaun before. I was in conversation with him, but I don't recall draft day at all. I don't think I would have did that. I know I did not send that text on draft day. You said on draft day. I knew who we were taking with the first pick. We took the guy that we wanted. So I don't remember making that call, that text.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Good Monday afternoon to you. Thank you so much for joining us for the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5. Here we are, Toledo sports leader. Can I just say it one time from the cheap seats? Blow it up. Blow the whole damn thing up. Again and again. Come on. And just for good measure, do it one more time. Blow it up! Blow it up! Blow up the worst franchise in all of team sports. Blow up. I mean, literally. Owner, sell it. GM, or not, they don't even have a GM. Front office, lackeys, go take a hike someplace. Coaching staff, go take a walk someplace. Players, y'all suck. Go find new jobs. Just blow it up. That factory of crapness that they call a football program, a football franchise out there in Believe Land, blow it up. I have no use whatsoever for the worst franchise in all of professional sports. And yesterday, they just, I don't know, did they set a new low? Or can you even possibly remotely calculate the very depths to which that team can fall?
Oh, I can calculate those depths.
Can you?
Yes,
don't know.
I can.
I don't
actually
know
finishing 0-16.
What's that?
Actually finishing 0-16 would qualify for
way,
that.
Well, Jim, I'll tell you what. This iteration of the Cleveland Browns would be a good touchdown underdog to the 2008 Lions.
Yeah, I'd actually have to agree with that, sadly.
They would be an underdog to the 0-16 2008 Lions. I really believe. And by the way, that might be the lowest. I don't even know if I could say that's the lowest it can get, because I think it can go more than that. I really do. But what I mean is, to date, each week out and each week's new embarrassment, to me, represents a new low. So they're just going to continue until they actually have like a competitive game, Jim, where they're, you know, playing against a good team, not a crap team, and they actually play solid enough football to say, oh, my God, it's the fourth quarter and there are 3 minutes left and the game is in doubt. They could win. It's possible. Until they do one of those, and I don't mean against a crap team like the Jets either, until they do one of those and actually resemble a pro football team, then I'm going to say it's a new low. It's just a new low. Each embarrassing blowout loss like yesterday's to the Houston Texans, who couldn't even put pressure on Kevin Hogan, couldn't even put pressure on him because J.J. Watt's done for the season. Whitney Mercilus is done for the season. Browns couldn't move the ball, 3 interceptions. Deshaun Watson continues to embarrass the Browns and anybody else that passed on him with 15 touchdown passes now in his last, what, 3 games or 4 games combined. It is simply staggering to watch that franchise try to operate. But that is just one of the many, 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 many stories we've got for you on what is going to appear. You know, Jim, I don't know if we should even play it because it's primarily going to be a football afternoon, but there are going to be some other things as well. But what the hell? That's it.
Grab your helmet. You're going in. It's time to play Monday Afternoon Quarterback on a 106.5 The Ticket.
You're up! Oh, my good Lord, help me. But that's not the only thing going on, obviously. Jim, what did we call the Lions game against the Saints on Friday going into the weekend? What did we call it? What did we say it was?
Oh, gosh, what was it?
Jesus Christ, dude. It was freaking 3 days ago. We called it a must-win game, all of us, me and you. And
yeah, that was okay, you're right. Yeah,
Jeremy Reisman, it was a must-win game.
Yes.
And it was not a must-win outcome. It was a loss outcome. It was a 3-3 now third place in the NFC North outcome, an opportunity to really, really grab hold in the division because of the inopportune, for the Packers fans anyway, timing of the loss of Aaron Rodgers. Of course, there's no opportune time to lose Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Rodgers done probably for the season. And it's Minnesota who seizes control instead of the Detroit Lions, who started out. You know, when we talked about this on Friday with Jeremy Reisman, we talked. You know, my point was, when I said, "Is this a must-win game?" It's not because, you know, at 3-3 your season is over. It's not. But from a fans' belief standpoint, enthusiasm standpoint, this things are different this year kind of a standpoint. When they started out 3-1. And they did so playing some really, really good defense. And they did so playing some, you know, really, really good ball control running game offense and not just relying on Matthew Stafford. Carry us, please, again and again and again. It started out 3-1. It just seemed like, you know, and as I said on Friday, many of the online ranking services, you know, from ESPN, CBS, Fox Sports, et cetera, had the Lions in the top. In fact, all of them, I think, had the Lions in the top 10 of the power rankings after 4 weeks, which is pretty daggone good. And the expectation started to grow a little bit, I think. But then the loss to the Panthers, and we said if they lose 2 in a row, now to the Saints, with the Steelers and Packers coming up after that, it could go south in a hurry. Now, of course, we do have to adjust that conversation a little bit because the Packers threat will not be what the Packers threat would have been had Aaron Rodgers not busted that collarbone yesterday. But the Steelers looked like the Super Bowl contenders that a lot of people thought they were going to be in taking down the Kansas City Chiefs and Kareem Hunt for the first time this season. Kareem Hunt, the NFL's rushing leader, by the way, managed just 21 yards on 9 carries. The Toledo product shut down by the Steelers defense in a big, big way. the entire Kansas City offense was. But so that doesn't look fun for the Lions to have to deal with coming up when they play next on the 29th of this month. So we kind of said they've got to win, make this 4-2 going into those next two very difficult games to really kind of keep the mo going. And instead, it's a two-game losing streak. And if you want to be really, you know, cynical about it, it's they've lost three of their last four. And you got the Steelers waiting, which very easily could be 4-5, you know, even though it is at Ford Field. Pittsburgh really looked like it was putting it together. Packers could be a different story. I don't know what Brett Hundley's got to offer. Time will tell, but it isn't going to be whatever Aaron Rodgers has to offer. So we'll see what happens with them. But 52-38, you look at that score and you think, oh, my God, Drew Brees must have gone off. Drew Brees probably threw, what, four, five touchdown passes? Maybe six? It's got to be somewhere in that neighborhood, right? Well, maybe not. How do the New Orleans Saints put up 52 points in the football game with Drew Brees only throwing for 186 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions? I think we know the answer to that. Holy goodness. Are we really going to be turning the ball over at that kind of a rate? When I say we, of course, I'm talking about the Detroit Lions. Can they afford to turn the ball over five times and allow three of those turnovers to become touchdowns? Jim, that's a new way of losing.
Yep.
I don't even know if the Browns have perfected that method of losing yet.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Brown. I was going to say something effective. That's Browns-esque kind of losing.
Yeah.
Two pick sixes, the very first touchdown of the entire game on a fumble, on a sack in the end zone. I mean, you draw it. No one draws it up that way. And so, yeah, if you're one of those guys who didn't see the game and you're looking at the numbers, you're thinking, okay, Ingram had a good game, over 100 yards, but Drew Brees wasn't awesome. How the heck did this team put up 52? Well, yeah, three defensive touchdowns, that's how.
For Detroit, by the way, just to throw this out there, you talk about it. I mean, the Saints had a five-touchdown lead.
Yep.
The Saints had a five-touchdown lead.
Now, let's see, what was it at its worst? 45-10 early stages of the third was when it was at its worst.
That's a five-touchdown lead. Five,
yep.
It's 35 points. That's exactly what we're talking about, and I don't know what it is about second halves and Matthew Stafford, and I don't know, and sometimes you just dig too deep of a hole that even doing what they did isn't enough to get out, and that's exactly what happened because Detroit scored four straight touchdowns. The punt return by Agnew, then the interception from Robinson, and then you get a couple of big plays from the offense, and I mean, my goodness, it's really, really strange how this team can find a way to play and outplay its opponent sometimes considerably in the second half or in the fourth quarter to try to come back from being down big, but that was just too much big. That was
yeah.
too big to try to come back from. Stafford, 25 of 52, not a good number, by the way. 312 yards and three touchdowns will certainly look nice on the resume, but you're talking about less than half of your passes.
Mm-hmm.
Less than half of your passes, a below 50% completion rate for a guy like Matthew Stafford. No, that's just not going to get it.
And then, of course, you're
turning the ball over as frequently as they did, and leading to the points that we just discussed.
Yep.
Man, what an ugly, ugly loss for the Lions.
Yeah, it was absolutely an ugly loss. And then, yeah, out of some of those incompletions, three of them were interceptions, two of them returned as pick sixes. And, you know, every team is going to have a game, you know, kind of like this. But the way you started
Are they?
This.
Are they? Is every team going to have a five-turnover game? Is
I
every
said
team
like
have
this.
Three I mean, touchdowns on turnovers scored
What I mean
them?
By that is a game
that's a,
where
that's
you.
That's a Cleveland-esque thing you said.
Very true. But what I mean by that is you're, every team, no matter how good is going to have a game where it's just not there and you're just making too many mistakes. Let's hope for the Lions' sake that is the case because now you have a team that's in, you know, they start off 2-0, 3-1, or spun another way, they've now lost three of their last four. Yeah, it's a good time for the bye week because there are some injuries that they suffered to boot on top of that for this game, but they need to fix some things right quick. Otherwise, this whole thing could be heading south just because of those next two games. Sunday night, when they do return to action on the 29th, that's a Sunday night game against the Steelers. Almost enough said right there. And then the week after that's the Monday nighter at Green Bay, where the only change is, and it's a big one, no question, is no Aaron Rodgers. But that's still the Lions in Lambeau, a place they've only won once in the last, what is it, 2017?
Yeah.
Almost 30 years. They've only won once in like 25, 30 years.
If it's ever
going to
happen again, this is the time.
It would have to. Oh, it has to be the time, because now you're in, now you're a, by my count, now you're a 3-3 team, as you mentioned, third in this division. And Aaron Rodgers or no Aaron Rodgers, since that game's at Lambeau, same thing applies that we said at the end of last week. You could very well be staring 3-5 at the in the face before you get the reprieves that are the Browns and Bears. But you don't want to be at 3-5 when you get those two teams. So you want to be closer to 500, so you're above that when you beat them.
That's exactly right. And so that's a little bit on the NFL to get started on this Monday afternoon quarterback edition. And we have more in the NFL to talk about as well. Colin Kaepernick has filed a grievance with the NFL Players Association. Which
just
I find,
when I thought we could stop talking about this.
Nope. We're going to file a grievance now and claim collusion. They have absolutely zero evidence. This wretched excuse for a human being is just going to continue to drive this thing into the ground, and I'm going to laugh at every single failure that he endures. I've got a great job for him in the NFL if he wants it. It's called scrubbing the floors in the men's room. Good luck to you on that, because that's just about the only thing you're going to get. But I'll talk about him. The Jets got hosed by the Patriots, well, by the officials, in one of the more egregiously bad calls. This was Lions-esque. You know, we talked about the five-turnover thing being Browns-esque. The Lions getting screwed by strange officiating calls has kind of become a norm. It's kind of become a thing. It's a meme in recent NFL seasons, Kush. The Jets got lionsed yesterday by the officials in the game against the Patriots when they scored what should have been a touchdown with 8 minutes go and had it count as a touchback on one of the most ridiculous calls you're ever going to see in here. You probably saw it, but we'll talk about it a little bit. So we do have those other NFL stories, but staying with the Browns and Lions thing in a way, just for like 2 seconds in order to share this part of the story with you, I have to ask you, which backup quarterback had a worse day yesterday or a worse weekend? Would it be the Browns' Kevin Hogan, backup to Deshaun Kizer for the first 5 weeks of the season, now handed the starting job? Or would it be Michigan's John O'Korn, backup to Wilton Spate before Spate went out with an injury that they're only saying could take weeks for him to heal? John O'Korn, fifth-year senior, transfer in last year from the University of Houston, in an overtime win over Indiana, managed to throw for a grand total of 58 yards.
Whew.
58 yards. Now, just to kind of, this isn't rivalry week. This isn't Ohio State, Michigan, or anything else. But look at what Ohio State just did to Nebraska, on the heels of what they did to Maryland, on the heels of what they did to Rutgers, on the heels of what they did to UNLV, on the heels of what they did to Army. And the way they have picked up their game, and particularly the passing game with JT Barrett, and compare that to the wreck that is the Michigan passing game right now with John O'Korn at the helm. And I don't mean to bash on a guy who's still just a college player. He's not even getting paid to play yet. I don't like to treat these guys quite as harshly as I do pro players. It comes with the territory when you're getting paid billions, or not billions, but millions of dollars to do the job. But my goodness gracious, John O'Korn, absolutely atrocious. Here he is after the game talking about executing the offense.
I mean, you've got to know the situation on every single play. We're not going to take a shot on every single play. And, you know, there might be a guy on a go route, but our object of that play is to hit a five-yard flat route. So just executing the play, how it's called, the purpose of the play. But when you get opportunities, you know, the one on the first drive to Donovan sticks out. On the go route, and he's wide open. I got to hit him.
Does it play like that?
I got to hit him. He said he admits he's got to hit him, and he's not making plays. 50. Jim, when's the last time you saw a major college program pass for 58 yards in a victory?
I have no idea. It sounds like the kind of thing I'd have to look up.
Like Ohio State just held Maryland to, like, I don't know, 60 yards of total offense or something like that a couple weeks ago. But that's obviously in a loss. Michigan found a way to overcome their wretched passing attack with John O'Korn at the helm by running the ball. And they really did a great job of running the ball, quite obviously. They got a 200-yard performance from their feature back, whose name is escaping me right now because I seem to have lost my place. Higdon, I think it was.
Yeah, Gron Higdon, yeah, the junior.
Who wasn't even supposed to be the starting running back
right
at the start of the season. Evans was supposed to be the guy. But anyway, thank goodness for them. They were running the ball. They did get a 200-yard performance from Higdon, Karan Higdon, including three rushing touchdowns, by the way. But if you expect to throw the ball for 58 yards and beat, I don't know, Penn State next week, yeah, this is going to be an ugly one. Number three ranked Penn State is going to feast on Michigan if they are able to put eight in the box and stuff their running game because they have no respect or trust whatsoever that John O'Korn can beat them. And why would they?
And by the way, that's wrong. The update is Penn State's now number two due to the chaos.
That's right, the Clemson dropping. Thank you.
Yeah, because of the whole Clemson dropping with four top 10 teams losing.
Hey, thank you. That's a great point. Obviously, we're going to talk a little college football coming up at about 4:40 today. Looking forward to catching up with our friend Bill Conley, who covers college football for SB Nation. But, yeah, that's right. With Clemson's shocking loss, Penn State moves from number three to number two. And, boy, this is the last thing, I think, honestly. It's the last thing that Michigan wants to see right now is the second-best team in the country, at least rankings-wise, when their offense is playing so poorly. And, by the way, kudos to their defense.
Yes.
I should say that. Still one of the best defenses in America, statistically speaking. The Michigan defense has been beastly, and they deserve all of the praise and the credit in the world for doing their thing, while the offense continues to try to find itself with some very young guys. Obviously, they're not playing with their starting quarterback. They're playing with underclassmen receivers after all the guys who graduated last year, replacements on the O-line, et cetera, backfield too. The defense has had to step up, and that's what Rashawn Gary talked about after the game, after stopping Indiana's last drive as that game went to overtime.
Oh, man, that just comes down to all the hard work you've been putting in on the offseason as a defense. And, during that last drive, it's like the game's on us. So, we got to do what we got to do. Play solid defense, how we've been doing for the past couple of games. Everybody had a chip on their shoulder at that point. Everybody was piped up. Everybody was ready to go. And, it was good to see, Chase got that pressure. I was like, go get him, Chase, go get him. Everybody tired and got that pressure QB to have nowhere to throw. And, great coverage. And at the end of that, I laid on Chase. I'm like, dang, man, I'm happy to play with you. So, just great getting this win.
Rashawn Gary said at part of that, if you didn't quite catch it all, he said, that last drive, it's just all up to us. Well, you could pretty much say this season right now is all up to you. It is all up to the defense, which, by the way, is playing with 10 new starters. They had to replace lost players from last season, graduates from the Wolverines. So anyway, Buckeyes roll on. Just another whopping of Nebraska in Lincoln. They now get to rest for a week before they get Penn State. Everything is coming up Buckeyes. I mean, it really, really is in terms of, they lost to Oklahoma back in week two. They have just steamrolled everybody since. Their biggest test is going to be Penn State, and they get a week to prepare for that. Meanwhile, Michigan, who lost in the rivalry game to Michigan State, comes back with a pretty precarious overtime win over Indiana, and they don't get a chance to rest before they get Penn State.
Yeah, and by the way, in terms of precarious, we're talking about if you throw for 58 yards, you end up winning thanks to your defense against Indiana overtime. I'll add one more number. Yeah. You're also not going to beat Penn State if you have 16 penalties for 141 yards. Goodness gracious, guys, come on.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. That statistic almost sounds wild. Is it one? You can fire. And we're waiting. Come on, Kush.
No, sorry about that. I'm picking up phones. What'd you ask?
I asked you if that statistic you just gave me about the number of penalties was our wild statistic.
No, it is not, but we do have...
Which is my cue to you to say fire.
I got it.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
So you got to forgive Jim Cushman. You see, he's handicapped. He was only born with two hands and one mouth and one set of ears instead of, multiples, so that he can answer phones while also pushing buttons and playing sounders. Wild Stat of the Day. We go to baseball, even though we called this a Monday afternoon quarterback session, and it is Justin Verlander, the longtime lifetime Detroit Tiger, with a complete game in the Game 2 win in the ALCS over the weekend. Complete game in the playoffs is becoming a rarity. Here's your stat. The last time any pitcher turned in a complete game playoff effort was Madison Bumgarner in the well, that wasn't that long ago. In the 2016 and a wild card game. I should read your stats before I go and talk about them. Also, Verlander's 124 pitches most thrown at a start. Since Verlander himself had 124 again in game two of the 2012 ALCS. You're killing me, Chrisland. And a 2-1 win over the Yankees while he was, of course, with the Tigers. There's your wild. And, I mean, boy, it's wild. That's a rarity. It hasn't happened since last season. Wild stat of the day. We'll get a bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way. We'll come back and get a lot more NFL to talk about, including Colin Kaepernick's lawsuit against the league. Or his grievance, I should say, with the NFLPA against the owners. All coming up right here on The Ticket.
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, it is the Extravaganza. We roll onward. You know, it's starting to get a little bit of a chill in the air, right? I mean, I'm not saying it's full-on winter yet, but it's a-coming. And Car Stereo One wants you to be ready for the cold weather. The best way to do it, avoid it altogether. Avoid standing outside and scraping the ice and snow off your windows while you wait for the car to warm up by getting yourself a remote car starter from Car Stereo One. That's right. Get the engine started long before you leave the house or the building. Get the window defroster going. Warm up the inside so you're nice and toasty when it's time to hit the road. Steve and the staff at Car Stereo One, they'll set you up with a remote car starter using your own smartphone for just $195 installed. That's right. Amazing. Now, if you want, you can wait and pay about $300 for the very same thing about a month or two from now, because in the dead of winter, they're going to charge you $300. Or you can do it for $195 right now. Save your money. Get your remote car starter operated by your own smartphone for $195. Installed now at Car Stereo One on Central, just a block east of Secor. If you need directions, go to CarStereo1.com. Turtle, all right. Got a lot of stuff to get into here in this 20-minute segment, including some phone calls. Because top of the hour, we're going to start the guest run. We're going to talk to Scott Petrak about the NFL coming up at about 4:10. Then we're going to talk college football with our guy, Bill Conley. Bill Conley. I was going to give that slot to somebody else. Bill Conley is going to be joining us from the SB Nation college football site. I'm looking forward to that. And, oh, by the way, speaking of college football, I mentioned the struggles of Michigan's John O'Korn. Well, he'd better have them all figured out by the time they get to the rivalry game at the Big House on November 25th, because he's got to entertain you, maybe. ESPN 106 on the Ticket in Yingling with a chance for you to attend that game, Michigan, Ohio State in Ann Arbor, with limo service up to the house from Total Image Limousine. That's right. The runner-up prize in this border battle contest is a trip for two to the Big Ten Championship game December 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. To qualify, just register at 1065theticket.com or text the word border battle right now to 64636. Border battle to 64636. Those who qualify will attend our giveaway party on Thursday night, November 16th at the Blarney downtown. It's all from Yingling, True House of Munch, Get Go Transportation, Churchill's, Country Hearth, Tass Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and, of course, your football freaks here at The Ticket. So I want to get into a lot of that stuff, including Colin Kaepernick, but I also want to talk to Jimmy. Because Jimmy's our guy. He likes to hit us up in the 3 o'clock hour most days, and we always have good conversation. Jimmy, what's shaking, man? How are you?
Two things. First, Mr. O'Korn's going to get to know a few of the Buckeyes, I have a feeling. Mr. Bose is going to Nick Bose is going to introduce himself multiple times. In fact, he's going to feel like he's in a limousine probably most of the time, at least.
That's what the pocket's
going to feel, the size of a limousine.
You got to hold off on that. O'Korn's got to survive Penn State this week before he ever thinks about getting to Ohio State in November 25th.
That's true. I hope he does, though, because that'll be fun.
All right, so what else?
I hope he does. Well, listen, hey, by the way, JT won't make the mistake in overtime that the Indiana quarterback did first and goal at the 3. He could have, you and I could have walked in. Hell, Kush could have walked in, but he misread the.
Now let's not go crazy. You and I could.
No. Kush could have walked in.
No, because he would have stopped. He would have stopped to light up a smoke on the 1. So
he misread it. That Michigan completely crashed down from the defensive end. If he'd have just pulled the ball, he would have walked in. So that game should have probably still be in overtime. Although Michigan probably that Higdon did an amazing job, because the play they scored on in the first play in overtime, it looked like Barry Sanders. He should have been tackled for a 5-yard loss. He didn't get a single block. That was all him. So they kind of They got to get. They were thoroughly outplayed. They were thoroughly outplayed. Indiana found just another way to lose. Yeah. But they're getting there. They're not.
Programs like Indiana do. That's what stops them from ascending to the top of the Big Ten.
I know, but I got to tell you, they are.
Yeah.
They find ways, but they are getting. That guy's getting them over the hump. They're even. They're different. They're different than they used to be. They're because they really out physicaled Michigan. They were better than Michigan for most of the day. So, but listen. I got a stat for you.
All right.
You almost were reading my mind when you brought up JB.
Is it more wild than Kush's stat? It's a rarity to have a complete game in the postseason. It hasn't happened since last year.
Well, you know, I've been on these airwaves, and I was a lone voice in the wilderness, and I was saying that not only JB was still a number one, but I said he was still his ace. He still had it. He still had it. He still had his velocity. But a lot of the problem was he was just on a team where he simply couldn't make a mistake, and he was grinding too much. He was getting no run support. And on the days where he did, maybe he was just off. But
well,
last year, he should have won the Cy Young.
Hold on. There's part of that I talked about as well in the beginning of, you know, first half of the season. And when we approached the trade deadline. That clearly he is still better than what he was pitching. And the proof of that, of course, is going back to last year where he could have been and should have been the Cy Young winner, probably in the American League. But there is a gear that you don't find, you can't find when you're 15 games out. When you know that you and your team is on the rest of your teammates are on the block as well, that you know this is all going to be broken up. It's hard, even if you're an elite pitcher or an elite athlete, it's hard to find that gear to really kind of send you into overdrive. And being what you know you can be, because you just don't have the motivation. And I don't want to hear you griping and saying, well, the contract should motivate you. You're making $25 million. That's not what I mean. But from a competitive standpoint, when you find yourself in the middle of a playoff chase or a playoff race, or now in this case, the playoffs, you have what you didn't have there when he was with the Tigers. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And it's what we saw down the stretch. For crying out loud, he was untouchable once he got to Houston.
Before that, into
a playoff pitcher.
Before that, he was pitching better, though. He was coming out of this long before that. His last seven or eight starts with the Tigers were quality starts. He won four out of his last five decisions with the Tigers, had a damn near perfect game going against the Dodgers. Hold on a second, Bob. Does anybody remember long before the trade talks out in San Diego, he had a perfect game? Going, I mean, he showed this all year that he still had the stuff to do it. That there were people saying that he literally didn't have the stuff anymore, that he was declining. They were using the word declining, okay? Now he has won 12 out of his last 13.
Well, here's
okay, you don't do that if you're in
second,
declining
Jimmy,
state.
Why people said he was declining, I think there was some evidence in that, like, you know, really.
There was never any evidence that he was declining.
Hold on, starting two full years ago when we started to see his fastball, you know, topping out at 93 and 94 instead of 96 and 97, and you think, is he just starting to hit that age where it starts to leave you a little bit? That's what I think a lot of people looked at as the measurables were saying that he was declining. But you're right. His performances were better, you know, got better and better, and they especially, once we got near the point where everybody knew that the Tigers were not going to be a part of the division chase, they were going to be sellers, everybody was on the market, that's when I think he kind of got the excitement of, you know what, there's an opportunity here. And he really, really cranked it up. And, of course, while he was in Houston, he was just, he was a Cy Young winner again.
He was a Cy Young winner. Two people left him off the ballot completely. If they even added him to the ballot and put him in last place, he wins the Cy Young. I mean, it's a disgrace what happened.
Those two guys should
not even be allowed to vote.
Absolutely should have won it last year. But
he's
pitching like that guy right now, even.
He's finished runner-up in the Cy Young three times. Two of those times were the closest margins in the history of the voting. It's just ridiculous.
But listen,
anybody really paying attention that has watched him throughout his career knew the one time he had the injury to his core and he just hadn't healed all the way, and it just took time if you knew the injury. But there was just too many people, too many talking heads that didn't do their due diligence, just looked at the analytics and just looked, oh, he's topping out at 94. They didn't give the guy time to heal. That's all it was. It was 1 year. That was
it.
What,
my friend, the
1 year isn't a decline. A decline is a trend. He never had that trend. It was 1 year.
I got you.
He's back, baby. He's back.
Here's the only thing I'll say for Justin Verlander. Thank God for Justin Verlander that the Yankees came back on the Indians, because if he was facing the Indians, it would be an entirely different ALCS.
You know, you cite those numbers, and they had a hell of a run against them, but there was a time, it wasn't that long ago, where he owned them and they owned Progressive Field. I remember.
That's what made it stand out so much. That's what made it so shocking, because I'm very well aware of that. He
right.
owned
and you
the
go...
Indians to the point where, for that stretch of time, I want to say like between, you know, like 2009 and like 2014, or maybe it might be too big, but... But whatever.
No,
it was,
you go back to his injury, and that's when the Indians started coming back on him.
Back to his injury.
Go back to 2014.
You're being an analyst. You're being an apologist.
No, I'm not being an apologist.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not. Go check the numbers.
Against everybody else, but he would come back. So what? He was healthy against everybody else, but injured against the Indians.
Because when he was done, you go check his losing years. And that's when the Indians started to own them. And it also coincides with the Indians getting better. I mean, it's a double negative, man. I mean, it is what it is. I'm not saying that the Indians didn't get to him, because they put some big innings on him last year when he was really good.
Yeah.
I never said that. But that's the thing. The only thing that got the Indians this year is the baseball gods. You just couldn't play 900 baseball and expect to do it in the playoffs. You needed that 5-game losing streak.
No,
it was
you did not
too
stop
good to be
that.
True.
I will never ever agree with that.
I'm telling you, losing streak, it's the baseball gods tripped you up more than anything.
They peaking too early, and I think they did.
That's what I think happened to the Indians.
That's reality.
The Indians peaked too early, brother. Later.
Yeah, they did. They peaked too early. There's no question about that. I'm just telling you right now, the Astros are thanking the baseball gods that you're talking about, that the Indians fell apart in that ALDS against the Yankees, and they're not facing, because quite frankly, the Indians have owned Justin Verlander really for the last 2 or 3 years. And I mean, virtually every start, I don't know if we can just say most of the time, I mean, pretty much every time he has just struggled. In his career, Verlander has fallen to 20-24 against the Indians with a 4.71 ERA. That's compared to his 3.49 career ERA. So against everybody else, dominant. Against the Indians, awful. But specifically, against the Indians in the last couple of years, it has just been crazy. In 2017, let me see here. That's compared to like 2016 for the Astros against the Rangers. The domination is extreme for the Indians over Verlander. In 2017, he was 1-3 with an 8.14 ERA. And his third start at 8.14? In his third start of the year, the Indians crushed him for 9 runs and 4 innings. He got hammered in his 17th start by them as well, allowing 7 runs and only 3 1/3. I mean, it was like literally every time out over the last couple of years, the Indians just owned Justin Verlander. And I say this because it was so striking in contrast, and Jim, you'll remember this, to the time that he was talking about in the early 2000s, or I'm sorry, early part of this decade, 2010, 11, 12, 13, in those areas, where and of course when he was the MVP and the Cy Young winner, you know, in the same season, he was doing this to everybody, but he was owning the Indians particularly, and it just kind of turned around. It just kind of got really, really crazy how the Indians flipped the script on Justin Verlander. So that's what made me excited, by the way, when I thought the Indians were going to beat the Yankees and win this thing. I thought the Astros got JV to counter Corey Kluber and to be the guy in the ALCS, and he's going to get rocked. And sure enough, we, of course, don't get to see it. Okay, Cam is in Toledo. Wants to talk about those Wolverines and John O'Korn's struggles. Hey, Cam, what's on your mind, man?
Oh, how's it going, Bob? Yeah, no, that's honestly, I am starting to get to the point where it's almost looking like there needs to be a coaching change, not a head coach change, but an offensive coordinator or something, because the play calling has been atrocious. The fact that our defense is being required to hold the team to almost getting to the point where it needs to be held to 10 points to win a game.
Yeah.
It's atrocious. You know, and exactly, and against, you know, and no slight to Indiana. I mean, Indiana's always given us a tough run for as long as I can remember. But you know, it's to the point where Caron Higdon had a what was it, like a 200-yard game, you know, which is it's insane because they usually run what, like three or four running backs. So yeah. You know, seeing these freak performances bail us out, you know, honestly, at come the end of the game when it hit overtime, I was actually, you know, and I'm a diehard Wolverines fan, but I was honestly rooting for Indiana to win because honestly, at this point, we don't deserve these games. You know, when we're getting outplayed by Indiana yeah. and getting bailed out by two freakish runs yeah. by Caron Higdon, I mean, it's, and then I hear people talk about, you know, what we're going to do against Penn State, what we're going to do against Ohio State, and, you know, it hurts to hear that. It hurts to say, you know, Ohio State's going to destroy us, Penn State's going to destroy us, but...
The only thing I will say just in defense of the Wolverines and the offensive staff, et cetera, is, you know, they are playing with their backup. I mean, not trying to just, you know, pour it on poor John O'Korn, Cam, but he didn't win the job for a reason. You know, because he wasn't as good as Wilton Spate. And when you're playing with a guy who started all last year, like Wilton Spate, it's different probably than a guy who did not play all last year when he transferred over and is now being thrown in. He's not as good, you know, and as good as his effort might be, the results aren't there. And, of course, it's a very young receiving core. We know about all the guys they lost to the draft, et cetera. You know,
right.
a bunch of new changes. So maybe there'll be a much, much better offense, you know, by the time they get to Maryland and Wisconsin and Ohio State at the end of the season as they work their way into this with a lot of young guys. But you know, part of this probably is the fact that O'Korn just isn't as good as Spate, and the fact that they have to play him because the other guys have no experience whatsoever is probably the biggest problem that they
face. Right, right. You know, and it's the frustrating part is watching them and seeing just small mistakes that end up having such huge consequences. Yeah. You know, like last week against Michigan State, the Eddie McDoom just dropped a cornerback nowhere near him, wide open, hits him right in the chest, and it just bounces in and out of his hands.
Yep. Those things,
you know,
those are the kinds of things that'll kill you, and it'll take a great season,
ball,
and it'll just a good season, or it'll take a good season and turn it into a mediocre season if you can't
deep ball
overcome
throw, this.
Cam, I gotta run, brother. I appreciate the okay. call, though, but I gotta yep. get a timeout here for a top of the hour Sports Center. Then we gotta make a little bit of room for our friend Scott Petrak. We're gonna go all football next half, or next hour, I should say, NFL, starting with Petrak at about 4:10. Then we're gonna talk Bill Conley about more NCAA football and the Buckeyes and the Wolverines and the Crimson Tide and the falling Clemson Tigers. And all of that coming up at about 4:35. So more Monday afternoon quarterback coming your way on the Extravaganza next hour.
And we got a long way to go. We're very humble about this, and we'll move on to a big, big road game next week. But this was a big game for our team, and mistakes were made, but I think it's something we can really grow from. There's a lot of young guys out there. He's doing a phenomenal job, and the other guys are doing phenomenal jobs. I mean, Donovan had some punt returns, but close, but he came through as well, and so many of them, you look up and down the roster, playing with great effort. I think that's where that's all starts. The effort is really there, and it was last week, and there's mistakes made. We just got to grow from them. We knew what we were in for today. We really did. We knew we were in for a football fight. Last time we were down here, went to double overtime. This time it goes to overtime. Indiana's got a veteran ball club.
The first place you all start is the offensive line. We had a tough injury to Brandon Bowen. Demetrius Knox went in and played very well. You know, this is the kind of bend but don't break defense we're getting ready to play. And, you know, to be methodical in that kind of environment, and just because they're not going to give you the deep ball. You know, JT played an exception when you have protection and the guys are making plays for them. That's very good performance on offense. Very good chemistry on offense. Receivers and quarterbacks are playing on a very high level. You know, very efficient. JT's efficiency tonight was elite. You guys are making plays for them and they're protecting them. This is a good time to be cooking, but it's also a good time to have a bye week and get these guys fresh.
You're always, during the course of a game, you're really considering a lot of different things. One thing we certainly knew is that we had a chance to bring it back. Probably nobody else in this universe probably thought so, except the guys in that locker room. The guys fought back and gave us a chance, particularly with some of the injuries that we had. You know, proud of the way in which the guys played. They played tough and hard-nosed, but just still, you give a team 21 points in terms of turnover, and they score from the defensive end of it. It's, you know, obviously we had a few too many miscues in that regard. Just didn't play as well as we like.
I think their guys were just being players. I don't know if it was a concerted effort coming into the game. I have no idea. I'm not in their meeting rooms, but I just got to find a way to get it through. Obviously, led to some big plays. You know, some tips led to some interceptions. I'm probably more, you know, frustrated at the fumbles than anything for myself. So I got to be better early on, not turn that ball over. I got to find a way to hold on to that ball.
I thought the start of it was pretty good. And then after, you know, we missed one, and then it started to, like I say, steamroll the other way. We couldn't get it back. That was a tough environment for Kevin, too. Again, I'm sure he's disappointed. I'm sure he wanted to show better. But those, again, those things happen, and we got to move on from it. I'm not going to let it get rock bottom. I just, like I told the team, it's not fun. It doesn't feel good. It's horrible. We don't like it. But this is the hand we're playing with. So we got to feel. Only guys, I'm going to say it again every week, the only guys that can fix it, the guys in the room. Coaches in the room, the players in the room. It's not going to change. What we got to do is stick together. Got to hold each other up, hold each other accountable, and we got to keep playing. And that's what we're going to do. This team is not going to quit. This was going to be week to week. You guys asked me last week. I never said that Kevin was going to be the starter for the rest of the season. We'll go back, watch the tape, and go from there and make a decision next week. If I'm going to change quarterback, I'm going back to Deshaun. I mean, I did text Deshaun before. I was in conversation with him, but I don't recall draft day at all. I don't think I would have did that. I know I did not send that text on draft day. You said on draft day. I knew who we were taking with the first pick. We took the guy that we wanted, so I don't remember making that call, that text.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed 13 minutes after 4 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. We got 47 minutes of outstanding awesome for you. That's 47 minutes more than the Browns had for you yesterday. That's 47 minutes more than the Browns have had for you of awesomeness this season. In fact, you might even... Hell, I don't know if they've been awesome for 47 minutes since 1990-bleeping-9. Blow it up, I say. I said it before. I will continue to say it. That was C4 or something, because my God, what a blow up that was. But seriously, blow it up. Why not? Why keep it the way it is now? That's what I ask. Welcome as we continue on our Monday afternoon quarterback. Good conversation in the first hour of the show. It'll be even better now that we invite our good friend Scott Petrak back to the program. A man to whom I think I owe a little bit of an apology, and I'll explain why after we greet him. Scott, thanks for joining us from the Browns Beat. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, man, except I kind of feel like I owe you an apology. We kind of blamed you. We didn't really blame you. That's not fair to say, but we took it out on you. I haven't talked to you for 2 weeks, and I'd like to get you onto our program at least once a week, your schedule permitting. To talk about everything that's going on with the Browns. But I am so disgusted, so completely over this team, that if they told me they were moving to Baltimore tomorrow and they'll have two teams down there, I would cheer, not fret. If they packed a Mayflower up overnight and headed to another city, I'd be fine with that. It's the worst-run franchise in all of professional sports, all team sports. I don't even know anything about soccer, but I promise you there's no soccer team run worse than the Cleveland Browns run as a football organization. So since I said we're not going to talk about them anymore, that robbed us of our opportunity to talk to you. And I feel bad about that because it's not your fault, and so I figured maybe we could bring you on to talk about some other NFL things, if that sounds okay to you.
Sure, bud. Whatever.
Now, I will... Because you do such great work chronicling the misery and the pathetic failure that are the Cleveland Browns. D and Jimmy Haslam deserve every ounce of the pain that they're feeling with this wretched organization they've put together. You chronicle all of that at BrownsZone.com, and you do such a good job there. I will ask you to talk about the misery as you see it, but it's really hard to do anything other than what I just said a moment ago, Scott. I feel like it needs to be blown up. Now, what most fans and most analysts have said about the Browns, the biggest problem since the return in 1999 is they're not patient. Every 2 years, they're firing a coach. Every 2 years, they're firing a general manager. The ownership has changed hands, twice since Al Lerner brought the team back. First to his son, of course, by his passing, and then to the Haslams. I mean, everything is blown up so often, continuity and stability are lacking. But as I watch all of this mess play out, and I haven't watched it, thankfully, because I've kind of sworn off of it. I just watch the highlights and I read BrownZone.com for what I need to know. As I observe all of this playing out, Scott Petrak, it occurs to me that there is no defending the keeping of Hugh Jackson and his staff. There is no defending the keeping of Sashi Brown and Paul D. Podesta in their positions. There is no defending, quite frankly, the Haslams continuing to own the team. I honestly feel like this is one of those cases where, despite the lack of patience and continuity that we talk about, I feel like there is no choice but to blow this up because it is such as it is such an abject failure. Tell me how you feel.
Yeah, I think you're right, Bob. And the lack of continuity and stability has been an issue for this organization. There's no doubt about it. But a bigger issue, in my eyes, is the lack of talent evaluation. From a player perspective, they just don't have enough talented players. And that's been an issue since Jimmy Haslam took over. I think before Haslam bought the team, you could point to certain guys that Phil Savage drafted and acquired. And at least I trusted Phil. He'd been around. He knew what he was doing. The same for Tom Heckert. They both had issues and flaws. But I thought they knew what they were doing when they watched a college football player. They watched a player on another NFL team and decided to sign him as a free agent. Since Haslam's taken over with Joe Banner and then Ray Farmer and now Sashi Brown, I don't trust that. I don't trust their talent evaluation. And if you're not picking the proper players, it doesn't matter who's coaching them. And having said that, it feels like the only way to fix that is to have somebody else in your front office. I think you can look at the front office and Hugh Jackson separately, and I think there's plenty of blame for each side. But as we've talked, I give way more blame to the front office and the personnel side, and I'm just not sure how you fix that without making a big change. Now, maybe you can keep the same guys in place and hire somebody on top of them. If you bring in a great football mind and make him president, and he has final say, maybe that fixes it without having a total demolition. But something big needs to change because I think we've seen enough to know they're not picking the right players and it's not going to get better with the current group that they have.
All right, Scott, let's dig a little bit with some of that because, as you know full well, there have been multiple reports today. And yesterday, I think Mike Florio was the first one to float it out there that said the Browns are in the market for and are searching for front office personnel type guys, experienced front office personnel guys. We don't know, at least I don't, maybe you can clarify it for us, if that means they would be replacing some of the guys you're talking about now, Sashi Brown, Paul DePodesta, or joining them to up the talent evaluation process, which you rightly decry. The Browns almost instantaneously said that's a lie, it's false, it's fake news, to borrow a political phrase these days. They're saying that's not true, we're not changing anything in the front office. What are you hearing and what do you believe?
Well, the Browns said the report was false and erroneous. Mm-hmm. That just means that, according to them, Jimmy Haslam hasn't already reached out to people about adding to his front office. The Florio report was pretty vague. It didn't say if it would be Sashi gets fired, DePodesta gets fired. It's just that Jimmy Haslam is reaching out to people to see if there's interest in joining the front office or coming aboard, whatever. But I think the semantics are irrelevant. Jimmy Haslam has to be considering making significant moves to the front office
within
and
season?
To the coaching staff.
Within the season?
Well, I think just in general. I think Jimmy Haslam is taking an overall look at his franchise and saying, okay, can I let this go on for another year? Even though in July I said I trusted these people. And even though when I put Sashi Brown in charge, I said it's going to be a 3 to 5 year rebuilding project, I think he has to reevaluate and say, do I have the right guys in place? And then the next question is, can I find better people to come in? Because Jimmy has had no success when he's blown it up the last two times he's blown it up. And then the question after that becomes timing. Can I do it in season? Do I wait to the end of the season? And I think these are all moving pieces that depend on how the next 2 to 4 games play out, depending on who Jimmy has him talks to. If Peyton Manning told him tomorrow that he would come in and be president of the team, we'd have an announcement tomorrow. But I don't think that's going to happen. So, there's a lot of moving pieces, but I would not be shocked if we had significant in-season changes. Now, you've been around long enough, Bob. We know that when a team goes to London and they're awful, the coach often gets fired on the way home from London because then there's a bye week and it's the perfect time, or it's the best time in-season to make a change. The Browns are going to London in 2 weeks, and they could be 0-8 when they are done in London, and it would be not a shock to anyone if that's when the dominoes start to fall.
We're talking to Scott Petrak, who is on the Browns beat. Hugh Jackson said he's not going swimming. you know what I'm talking about. He made a statement last year when he swore that this year would be different. It's going to be a build, yes, but they're going to win football games, and there'll never be another season like last year at 1-15. At 0-6, they look worse than they did a year ago. I don't know if I can say that definitively. I think it's impossible. I did say earlier in the game, or show I should say, Scott, that this Browns team would be a touchdown underdog to the 0-16 2008 Lions. I feel like they would be, because their quarterback situation is such a train wreck. They're excuse me, and it's not just the lack of talent, too. The scheming, it makes me wonder. I still don't know why Greg Williams is wasting Jabril Peppers, making him play punt return on first, second, and third down. He's 25, 30 yards off the ball and unable to contribute and make plays. I mean, the schemes are bad. The play calling is bad. He needs an offense coordinator. All of these things are going on. It's not just talent. And he said we're not going to have another year like last year. I think this year through six games is worse than last year, in which they did not win until week number 15. Is this worse than that 1-15 season? Who would win between last year's team and this team?
No, that's a good question. That's a good question, Bob. I would say that last year, at least, they should have won week three. They missed a bunch of field goals against Miami. That should have been a win. So this year, there hasn't been a game where you say they were one play away from winning. I know the Jets game, they had some bad plays, right? But it didn't come down to, you know, one specific play. If that had happened at the end of the game, they would have won, like the Miami game last year. I'll tell you what, the quarterback situation was just as bad last year. And a lot of that was injuries. You know, Robert Griffin got hurt, and then Josh McCown got hurt, and then you got 8 weeks of Cody Kessler. I think DeShone Kizer's a better quarterback than Cody Kessler. I don't think it's close. When you look at the rest of the roster, this one's even younger than last year's young roster. I think they're better at a couple different spots. I think the offensive line is better. Miles Garrett's better. But overall, it's not significantly better. And that's the problem. That's the problem, Bob. In this rebuild, it was supposed to be destruction last year and then a steady improvement. And we just haven't seen that progress. And, you know, Hugh continues to be defiant and, God bless him, optimistic and say it's going to happen and he's not jumping in the lake and you're going to see wins. But I just don't see progress across the roster. And a lot of that is the quarterback. You know, they haven't got good quarterback play and that affects everything among the team. But I think at the heart of it is Hugh Jackson goes into every game knowing his roster does not match up with the opponent's roster. And therefore, he panic. I don't know if panic's too strong, but he changes the game plan and he tries to figure out ways to overcome that. And I think that makes him look bad, and I think the team looks bad. And it's because in the back of his head he said, I can't compete with the team I've been given. How am I going to get a win?
Scott, does he need an offensive coordinator?
You know, I'd be fine if he brought one in, Bob, but to me, of all the issues, that's not one that I feel super strongly about. Now, this isn't to say he does a great job in game management or clock management. I think we can point to several things he did us wrong.
And not just that.
But
Scott,
I think
just game planning. He doesn't have a quarterback on his roster that has a win in the National Football League. I don't know if that's ever happened before, even new team. Why am I drawing a blank?
Expansion team.
Expansion team.
Expansion.
Even with the expansion team, I don't think I've ever seen a team have a roster with no quarterbacks that have one victory in the National Football League as a starter, and they do. That's what this team has. Now, I'm watching this offensive game plan week after week after week, and I'm thinking to myself, why are they throwing the ball whatever percentage of the plays that they are? I mean, far, far too much. When you've got a decent running back, and they do with Crowell, and a really, really good, you know, different kind of threat in Duke Johnson, why are you throwing the ball as often as you are? Why are you putting all of that on a 21-year-old second-round draft pick, talking about DeShone Kizer, who's learning this game, and they throw the ball at an extraordinarily high rate, and I just feel like I don't understand that from Hugh Jackson. And if there was somebody whose only job was to just design the right game plan and the right offensive philosophy from a coordinator's position, he could go on with the business of coaching the overall team and making sure things are right. And I just feel like it's not getting – I don't know. I just have a problem with the way they call plays with Hugh Jackson calling plays, and I don't care if it's Hogan, if it's Kaiser, if it's Kessler or anybody else running it, they're just throwing the ball far too much for a team with no, you know, with no receivers and no qualified quarterback to do that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and you're not alone in that. Hugh would tell you that he throws so much because they're behind so early and by so many points, and that's the only way to catch up. He would tell you that yesterday, for example, right before the Hogan threw the pick six, they had a 5-yard penalty, so it's 1st and 15. And if you're trying to score a touchdown there, you have to throw the ball. You're not going to run it to get back to get that first down. And then he throws and it turns into a pick six and you go, why didn't he run the ball? So I think Hugh, I'm not going to argue that he hasn't run enough, but I think there's extenuating circumstances. And I think Hugh is doing the same offense that worked in Cincinnati and worked to a degree when he was out in Oakland. And he just doesn't have the horses to run that offense. Now, maybe he should make more adjustments. But I will say this, I think if he made those adjustments, all you would see is closer to loss. I think the game plan he has in place, at least he feels strongly about this, gives him the best chance to win, and the one everyone else is advocating would just mean they lose by less.
If we go back, Scott Petrak joining us to talk NFL, talking specifically about the clown show that is the Cleveland Browns organization, to the conversation about front office people and the reports that they've reached out to front office candidates. Who's out there? And that might not be a fair question for you because I don't know the names of prospective GMs or player personnel people or whatever, but all I do know is that there's two people in charge here. And one's a lawyer and the other's a baseball scout, and they were handed the keys to this thing, and it's 1-21 since they got here. Who's out there that would be able to work with them or replace them, or is that a little too difficult to answer?
No, here's three names that I've seen from NFL people.
You mentioned Manning.
Peyton Manning, I mean, cause just as he has a connection with Jimmy Haslam.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and he would excite people, and Peyton Manning told Peter King, I think it was a week ago, that he wants to do that job, but he doesn't want to do it right now, and it didn't sound like he wanted to do it in January. It sounded like he wanted a year or two with his family away from football before he dove in to kind of be the next John Elway kind of guy. So let's take Peyton Manning out of the equation. Rick Spielman up in Minnesota has Ohio ties. He's a football guy. Chris's brother, he's been mentioned. You know, I've heard his name is a possible candidate. Terry McDonough, who's with Arizona, is a football guy. And then the Patriots, you know, you got Nick Caserio and there's a Josh McDaniels, obviously their offensive coordinator, former Broncos coach. I think that Tandem was close to taking the 49ers job. At least I've read that. Maybe you could entice them as a package deal to come to Cleveland. I mean, those are the three names, and obviously I think we're weeks away from anything close to happening. But those are three names that I think could interest the Browns and would be interesting for fans to say, okay, these are three guys that have really good reputations throughout the league. Now, having said that, you know, I think Jimmy Haslam would have to do a crazy convincing job because he hasn't kept anybody for more than 2 years and he hasn't shown that he can put any kind of non-dysfunctional organization in place.
Well, you're right about that, and nobody would trust him, although everybody who ends up, you know, signing a 5-year contract and gets axed after 1 or 2 years, they get paid to do nothing for four
years.
They
get paid.
Or they double dip when they go to get their next job someplace else. But what about the coaching thing? As you pointed out, a lot of times the London trip is the one that does it. Who would take over? Would it be Greg Williams?
Yeah, probably. It'd probably be Greg because he's been a head coach before. Mm-hmm. It could be Al Saunders, the receiver coach. He's older. I don't think he might be 70. He's been a head coach before. Now, the problem is, you mentioned he's his own offensive coordinator, so you either have to promote Al Saunders to be coordinator, or Kirby Wilson, the run game coordinator, would take over. You know, an outside of the box guy would be Chris Tabor, the special teams guy that's just been here forever, survived so many coaching changes. Maybe you just turn to him to be that guy to get you through the rest of the season. But none of them are great alternatives, which is why maybe you'll see Jimmy stick with it through the end of the year and then reevaluate. You know, and I'm sure he's hoping that a miracle happens, right? And if If they won four out of the next eight games, maybe that would be enough sign, right? People go, hey, we can see it moving in the right direction. Let's stick with this rebuilding process. The problem is when you're 0-6 and they've had three really bad losses in a row, you know, starting with Cincinnati and then the close one to the Jets and then the Houston debacle yesterday,
yeah.
It's hard to see progress and it's hard to find any reason to say, yes, it's going to be fixed anytime soon.
No question about that. Scott, last thing we got to run real quick on the quarterbacks. You were opposed to the move to start Kevin Hogan yesterday, and it looks like, according to reports I'm seeing this afternoon, and I'm on the air, so I can't read them closely. I'm just kind of seeing headlines pass before my eyes that it looks like they're going to change it back to Deshaun Kizer again. What do you think? What do you think that means? If you're analyzing this, Hugh Jackson, you know, basically saw enough from Deshaun to say he's not ready. He needs to watch a little bit, learn a little bit, and okay, that's enough learning. Kevin was terrible. Right back out there again. You know what I mean? It really kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't like the move in the first place, so I'm good with going back to Deshaun Kizer next week. It's Hugh didn't make an announcement, but he sure sounds like he's going to go back to Deshaun Kizer.
Yeah.
It means that Kevin Hogan was terrible, that at least Deshaun Kizer got 1 week to watch from the sideline, and that you need to see this kid play as much as possible. And I think those are all the factors. To me, those were all the factors a week ago, but Hugh was chasing an elusive spark, and maybe Kevin Hogan would be the guy that could play well for four quarters. And when he played so terribly yesterday, the only move is to go back to the kid who has more talent than Kevin Hogan and just needs as much experience as possible.
No question about that. Good stuff by Scott Petrak, as always. Scott, thanks very much. Again, I'm in a point where I've reached ambivalence or indifference or whatever you want to call it, apathy. I don't care about them, and that's why I haven't wanted to give them attention. But I always enjoy our conversations. Keep up the great work at BrownsZone.com as well.
I appreciate it, Bob.
You got it. Thanks very much. All right, let's get a bottom of the hour Sports Center coming your way, local Sports Center with Cushland. Then we're going to shift gears to the college game. Buckeyes rolling on, Wolverines barely scraping by. Nittany Lions, are they the best team in the Big Ten? They're number two overall in the country right now, now that Clemson has fallen. We talk college football with Bill Connelly of SB Nation coming up right here on The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Rolling right along at 4:43. It is indeed the extravaganza. Hey, got to remind you, if you're going to watch Monday Night Football tonight and you're not in the stadium, if you're going to go to a college game this weekend and you're not in the stadium, there's one place you should be, and that's at B-Dubs. That's where football nirvana is. All of it, all season long, they've gone above and beyond to create the perfect man cave. Countless numbers of taps on tap, HD screens everywhere, the entire place committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football. Food and drinks included. Especially the 35th Weck sandwich, classic menu item that they've called up, and also the limited-time-only Blue Moon barbecue sauce, which is awesome on wings, tremendous on chicken tenders, and you know where else it's great? On your burger. Yeah, ask for some Blue Moon on the burger. You're going to love that, too. There's more, but you got to come in to find out to the place with the best football experience going. It's Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. Talking college football now, as we did in the first hour of the program, our friend Bill Connelly is back to chat with us. Bill writes about college football for SBNation.com. Hey, Bill, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I am outstanding. Good to talk to you. Hey, I don't know why I missed this on SB Nation before, but I just pulled it up. Your latest 130-team S&P rankings, in which you've got two teams on top of the nation, and the first one isn't Alabama, the team that is the number one rated team in the coaches poll, the AP poll, and pretty much every ranking system known to the free world. You've got Ohio State 6-1, having lost at home to Oklahoma, ahead of Alabama in the S&P ratings. They were last week. They remain so this week. Tell me why the Buckeyes, in your rankings, are the best team in the country.
Yeah, and if I were doing this, if I had a vote in a poll, I'd be picking Alabama, too. I trust them more than anybody. But, basically this is a computer ranking that's based on, tempo adjustments, opponent adjustments, and basically, hones in on the things that are more likely to win ball games, efficiency and whatnot. And so, you know, if you look at game for game, I mean, they were really bad against Oklahoma, and there's no getting around that. They've been virtually perfect since then, for five games since then, and they ended up, what they ended up doing to Indiana over four quarters, even though they kind of struggled in the first couple, Indiana has acquitted itself reasonably well since then too, and they won by 28 points or whatever. So, Yeah, I mean, on paper, what they have done since losing to Oklahoma basically is a direct replica of what they did after losing to Virginia Tech a few years ago. They relaxed. They started doing a better job of getting the ball downfield. They are as efficient as they've ever been. I mean, my success rate measure, they're first in rushing success rate. They're seventh in passing success rate. They're just really good, and they've been tremendous since the loss. And you know, they have no margin for error here. They can't get, you know, have a field goal blocked against Penn State this time around. They need to take care of business. They have four games against top 40 teams left in the last five, but they've been tremendous over the last month.
All right, but you said the name Penn State just a moment ago. Let's talk about them. They have moved up now that Clemson lost to Syracuse and Dino Babers, who, by the way, is a big friend of our show's because we loved him when he was head coach at Bowling Green. Just such a great guy. Penn State has moved up to number two. They look like they might be the best team in the Big Ten. How do you see that shaking out? Because they've got 2 weeks. So Ohio State's got a bye. Of course, Penn State has to play Michigan this week. Ohio State gets a bye before they clash on October 29th.
Yeah, their defense has been much, much better this year. And really, since the second half of last season, too. You know, they struggled about the first month or month and a half of last year, and then they started playing at kind of a top 15, 20 level, I think, on the defensive side of the ball. This year, they're top 10. They're really, really nice all the way around. They are really good at getting you behind schedule. They don't give up big plays that when on the rare occasion that they do create a scoring opportunities, they hold you to field goals. It's a really nice defense all the way around, especially in the passing game. That's been their biggest strength. The run defense has been fine. The pass defense has been tremendous. And basically, aside from, you know, a couple big plays late in the Iowa game and then the beginning of the Indiana game, it's been really, really hard to move the ball on Penn State so far. So that's been, you know, different. You know, last year was, you know, big offensive plays and timely stops. This year they're just making stops all the time. And they've been a lot more efficient with the ball on offense, fewer big plays, but they're doing a lot of all those little things a lot better now.
Bill Connolly is our guest, writes about college football for SB Nation, talking about all things in the top 10, really. But I do want to get down into the second 10 as well, talk about Michigan as well, Bill. How overrated were the Wolverines at the start of the season? And I say that not to throw bombs at our Michigan fans who love them. Of course, we're here in Toledo. We're kind of halfway between Columbus and Ann Arbor. But I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, they started out in, what, the top 7-8? I think they were ranked 8th maybe preseason after having lost 10 defensive starters and 7 offensive starters. And now they're playing with their backup quarterback, barely escaping Indiana. This after losing the rivalry game to Michigan State. I think one poll still has them at 15, the other one at 19. How good or how overrated do you think Michigan is?
Yeah, I think in the preseason I had them somewhere around 11th to 13th because they did lose a lot of production, and that was a big thing. And now they're 16th. So, I mean, they're not that, the defense has actually been, considering what they lost,
yeah.
I mean, I have them as still second on defense, and that's incredible considering, you know, the turnover they had there. Offense is 76. You know, that's been a little bit of an issue. It was an issue before Speed got hurt, and now O'Korn really, really is struggling. And so, obviously, they've got a pretty, a firm ceiling until they get that part figured out. I'm really confused as to, you know, is O'Korn really the best option here? Peters or somebody else? Is he really ahead of them? But, you know, it's obviously a question mark. They had, before Speed got hurt, they had kind of an all or nothing run game and an okay passing attack. Passing game pretty quickly trailed off and it hasn't picked back up yet. So it's going to be, with that defense, they can absolutely beat anybody, any single team on the schedule. They play Penn State. They can wreck a lot of dreams here. Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State. But that offense means they can only win games, you know, 2017 or something like that, and that's kind of hard.
Do you think Jim Harbaugh would ever pull the trigger on a redshirt freshman like Brandon Peters? I mean, they won a game in which their starting quarterback had 58 yards passing, and it's worse than the stats sound. I mean, it really, really is. John O'Korn's performance, and again, I hate to be, you know, bad-mouthing a kid who's still a college student.
It was bad.
But you know what I mean? Performance-wise is what we talk about here, not personally. Performance-wise, I think the performance has been worse than the numbers indicate, and the numbers are pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, I break everything into standard downs and passing downs. You know, standard downs are first downs, and, you know, second and, I think, 7 or less, third and 4 or less. Just areas where you can either run or pass. Right now, Michigan in standard down success rate is 116th in the country. They've not been able to run the ball consistently And so they tried throwing a little bit more the other day, and he was on those standard downs. He was 5 for 10 for 15 yards passing. Just, you know, the reads, the footwork, the everything, it's just off. And obviously he's dealing with an extremely young receiving core as well, which is causing its own set of issues. So, I mean, it really is. If you're talking yourself into Michigan being a top 10 team this year, there are basically two parts. Number one, the defense really wouldn't lose a step with that, you know, after losing all those starters. And that part's, you know, been absolutely true. Don Brown is an incredible defensive coordinator. But number two was being able to establish a level of efficiency, be it with, you know, an experienced quarterback and a young receiving core, or just having that experienced run game be a little bit better this year. And it's been so volatile. You know, it's all 1 yard gains or 50 yard gains, and there aren't nearly enough of those 50 yard gains. So again, like, I mean, if they can keep you in the team, they can win any game on the schedule. It's just you know, they can't make any mistakes. They got to win field position. They got to win special teams. They've given themselves no margin for error.
I think that's fair to say. We're talking to Bill Connolly, who writes college football for SBNation.com. Hey, Bill, Jim Cushion's got a question for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
I want to zoom out nationally if I can, Bill. This was one of those crazy weekends. There always seems to be at least one of them every season. Four top 10 teams going down. It's recalibrating where some of the rankings are. Obviously, the first playoff rankings won't come out until Halloween. But based on what we saw this weekend, which of the teams lost has the best chance to get back into it playoff-wise?
Well, what's funny is, you know, with what we've seen elsewhere, it almost seems like if you count last week's OU loss in that bunch with this week's games, it really kind of almost seems like OU has the best quality loss there. Syracuse is about a top 60 team. Arizona State's like a top 80 team. Iowa State just popped into my top 30 because they've been, they've looked really, really good. They're, you know, they lost to, you know, they held Texas pretty well but couldn't convert some chances. They lost to Iowa in overtime. Otherwise, they've been great. And so really, I think Oklahoma stands to benefit pretty well. But other teams that lost, obviously Clemson, I mean, you do have still a direct path. You beat NC State, you beat Florida State, you win the Atlantic, you win the ACC, and when you lose, obviously you kind of have to, now it's kind of chance. If a bunch of teams finish undefeated, then you might be out of luck. But I think it's safe to say with the wins they already have, if Clemson wins out, they're absolutely in the playoffs. So, you know, my problem with Clemson is they can't run the ball unless Kelly Bryant is carrying the football, and he's hurt. And so I don't know. It's time for them to flip the switch. I don't know if they've got a switch to flip.
Bill, last thing for you as we get close to wrapping this up. It's midseason, just about right at the midpoint, I think, for most teams this week, depending on who's got buys. Who's the Heisman Trophy winner through half the season?
You know, I love Saquon Barkley to death, but I think what Bryce Love has been doing, it's almost like even if you can't stay up till, you know, 3 a.m. to watch Stanford play, you just look at the stats and the box score and go, man, you know, 10 yards per carry and all that. Maybe I just give it to him. You know, at that point, if he keeps that pace up, you almost don't have a choice in the matter, I don't think. But I think Saquon or Love have the best chances right now. Mayfield's still right there, obviously. Barrett's numbers have been phenomenal since the OU game, but I think people kind of wrote him off at that point, so I don't know what he has to do to kind of get back into the mix. But I would say those two, and honestly, Mika Fitzpatrick would get probably, you know, should get more votes than he obviously will, because he's pretty phenomenal as well.
Any other quarterbacks, including the defending champion?
I mean, Lamar, I think, you know, his team is going to cost him any shot at a repeat, I think. And that's very, very unfortunate, but I think that's what it is. I mean, he's trying to carry that team. He's doing a lot of good things, but they're just, you know, he doesn't have the supporting cast on offense. The defense stinks. They managed to figure out how to give up 40 plus points to Boston College last week. And we know that's going, especially when you're a quarterback, we know that matters. Even if it shouldn't, we know the voters will hold that against him, and I don't see it happening for him.
What is your take on the California duo, Rosen at UCLA and Darnold at USC? Because especially Darnold was kind of considered going into the season as being the guy that everybody was going to be watching. He possibly the first pick in the NFL draft coming up. And what have you seen out of him? He's thrown a lot more picks, I think, this year than he did last year, at least pace-wise.
Yeah, maybe it's a situation where he got a little bit lucky with the picks he didn't throw last year. But, I mean, he's aggressive. He gets the ball downfield. He tries to make all the throws that, you know, a pro scout's going to see and go, yes, yes, I try that out, you know. And even if it means a few picks, like, you know, Jameis Winston threw a bunch of picks, and he's been all right in the pros as well. So I don't think they're going to hold that against him. Rosen is just so interesting in every possible way in terms of the risks he takes. He and Darnold both are getting that ball downfield quite a bit. But, I mean, he's very, very efficient. He's got very little to work with. Last year, their defense actually took some steps forward while the offense fell apart. This year, the offense has it figured out, top 10 in my numbers, and the defense is ranked in the triple digits. So that's another case where his supporting cast is going to keep him from getting any sort of Heisman major recognition, I think. But I don't think pro scouts are going to be too scared off by what they've seen so far.
Yeah, I think Bryce Love is a really good call there. I mean, the numbers are really staggering when you're talking about 10 yards carry. And you know what? It makes me wonder how good, honestly, was Christian McCaffrey. I mean, and I don't mean that's in a disparaging way, but I mean, is there an offensive line that carried over last year to this year? Is there a running system that, you know, a lot of schools have passing, you know, passing systems that just make it easy for whoever you slot in there is going to put up big numbers? Or what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I loved last year, and just in a small sample size, he was doing really good things. And obviously, he had a nice bowl game when McCaffrey was out. So I do think, you know, I mean, obviously, we know all about the blue chippers they recruit on the offensive line. They've got a pretty favorable situation this year. But, I mean, McCaffrey was good. It's just Love has been so much better, and that's an incredible thing to say considering how we knew what McCaffrey's upside was. He hit that upside a lot, and Love still really might be better.
Bryce Love in the win over Oregon, by the way, Saturday, 17 carries, 147 yards, and two touchdowns.
That hurt his averages.
That was his worst game of the year.
Yeah.
Just to throw it out there, 8.6 a carry. That was his worst game of the year. So, yeah, he's put together some pretty remarkable numbers. Bill Conley, SBNation.com. Read him about all things college football. Bill, thanks, man. We always appreciate when you visit.
Thank you.
All right, have a great one. That's it. Time is up. I cannot believe it's 4:57 already. We're 3 minutes away from turning it over to Mr. Miller. Drive time is coming your way next, so stay where you are right here on this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.